Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. How are you? Yes, this is Trish, Topics with Trish, and it is Tuesday, February 21st, 4 o'clock. And we are talking about juveniles and crime and drugs and murder and the things that are going on in our communities. We have to make sure that we are standing up for our kids no matter what's going on because, you know, our kids are the future. And if, in fact, we are teaching them that crime and drugs and murder and guns is the only way to get through life, you know, you got to get through this in order to do anything else with your life, then what are we really teaching them? I apologize, my group chat link. Sorry, everyone, sent it to the wrong place. We are not doing the live video feed today. What we are doing is a group chat feed. I want to see how this works because next Thursday, this coming Thursday, I'm going to be having a guest, and I can't do video when I have a guest. And Ms. Stephanie Mann is a crime prevention specialist since 1978. We're going to get her on the air with us. She's developed what she calls the national network is Safe Kids Now National Network, but it's Safe Neighborhoods Now. And it is a program developed to help build stronger, safer, healthier neighborhoods for our kids. And we'll be talking to her on Thursday. So today I wanted to go over the information in the data that I was able to find. And that's what we are going to do today. So welcome, everyone. I'm sorry, I'm trying to talk and type at the same time, so what I'm talking is coming out on my cursor. Kind of gets confusing. I apologize. All right, okay, let's get this over here so we can stop worrying about that and we can say, okay, that's taken care of. Okay, then I can get into the group chat area. I want to make sure that I get this deleted off of my main page because we don't want people thinking that they can chat there. I want them chatting in our group. All right. So, again, we are talking about juveniles today. And we want to make sure that we cover all of the issues in various communities across the globe. And I was trying to pull up some data on this. And it's hard to find data on juvenile offenders, other than, of course, the national database, which shows the average of arrests. Now, there's a lot of information. Of course, people are talking about juveniles being prosecuted as adults, and, you know, at what age range can they do that? When can they, when do the courts take into account that you're no longer a juvenile, that your crime warrants an adult offense. What I found is that more violent the offense, you know, 7, 8, 9 year olds being prosecuted for attempted murder or murder. Why little ones like that? What are they thinking? You know, I remember the case of a little girl. She was 9 years old when her and her friend killed another girl. 12 years old by the time she went to court, and her response was, I wanted to see what it was like. And they had beat this girl up out in the woods and left her there for dead. So, you know, when they found her, of course she was dead, and then of course found out that those were the last two girls that saw her. And of course one girl, each girl pointed, they didn't deny that they'd done anything, but they were pointing the finger at each other as to whose idea it was and what they were going to do to her and so on and so forth. So, that to me, is, dangerous sign. And they were young girls. They weren't boys. They didn't have weapons. But they just took another girl out into the woods and beat her up. I am silent because I am typing. All right. Pardon me. I'm still, like I said, I still have some bronchitis and everything going on. All right. I'm really sorry that we don't have any video going on today. The information, you know, it's a down day for me. Whenever it's a down day for me, unfortunately, I can't keep up with doing the video for everything, but I will try to do them as much as I can. This information is something that I want, that I hope everyone will listen to, and something that I hope everyone will take to heart. Because this is our children out there, and this is the future that we're giving them. Again, I want to remind everyone and welcome you to Your Voice Radio Network. We are a team from the across the country, mainly East Coast areas. I'm out here in the Midwest, Pennsylvania, Florida, Maryland, and, of course, South Central Illinois. I was born and raised in a rural environment. I lived outside of the city of Pittsburgh for about 15 years, just about 20 miles outside of the city. I've grew up and have lived the other part of my life just about 40 miles south of St. Louis. So it's, you know, I've not been in that inner city community. So I really wanted to do some research on this and try and figure out, what are we doing wrong here? How is it that, you know, we see more and more juvenile offenders that are being brought to the surface? However, as when I look at the National Department of Justice, juveniles, the juvenile population characteristics, juvenile justice system structure, process, law enforcement and juvenile crime, juveniles in court, juvenile, pardon me, juvenile arrests, according to the total And these are between 2005 and 2014. Estimated number of juvenile arrests for 2014. In 2014, law enforcement agencies in the U.S. made an estimated 1 million arrests of persons under age 18, 50% less than the number of arrests in 2005. So that means in 2005, we, our national record was 2 million juveniles under the age of 18 arrested. Now, these range, it actually, the number of juvenile arrests across the nation was 1,024,000. The violent crime is 53,500. 800 murder and manslaughter. 3,300 rape. 15,400 for robbery. 30,100 for aggravated assault. Burglary, 40,300. Larceny, 178,000. Motor vehicle theft, 12,700. Arson, 3,200. Assaults, 139,100. Forgery and counterfeiting, 1,200. Fraud, 4,300. Embezzlement, 500. Buying, receiving, possessing stolen property, 10,400. Vandalism, 45,000. Weapons, carrying and possessing weapons, 20,700. Prostitution and commercialized sex is anyone under the age of 18 cannot be arrested for prostitution. They have changed that law. So I don't know what they're doing, arresting and actually charging people under the age of 18 with prostitution. But in 2014, they did. 700 of them. Sex offenses, except for forcible rape and prostitution. Boy, do they need to change their language. Sex offenses, 9,400. Drug violations, drug abuse violations, 112,600. Gambling, 600. Offenses against the family and other children, 3,400. Driving under the influence, 7,000. Liquor law, drinking under the age, 53,000. Drunkenness, 6,500. Disorderly conduct, 80,800. Vagrancy. I didn't know you could arrest a minor for vagrancy. $900. Curfew and loitering, 53,700. Now, I have a major problem with, you know, with many of these, of course. This is, to me, having, you know, we've got like a 74 million population of kids out there. When you have that, you know, okay, fine. We say, arresting 1 million isn't much. But if there's 1 million juvenile offenders out there, and they are getting charged with murder and rape and assaults and manslaughter. And, you know, it's not just burglary and theft. They're getting weapons charges. They're getting major violations there. And we see more and more go into court and get prosecuted under adult laws, depending on the number of times they've been through the juvenile system and depending on the type of crime committed. Because in some states, now that's where we're iffy, because each state is different. Juvenile laws, like any other laws in any state, are different because the voters say, we need this law passed, we need to take care of this issue, and the voters in that state pass that law. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be passed in another state. Doesn't mean that it is now a federal law or a federal crime. It just means that in that state, it's against the law. And at this age, you will be prosecuted for this offense as an adult. Again, this all goes by state. I live in Illinois. In Illinois, we have, of course, the big city of Chicago. Now, the thing about Chicago is that when I pull up the information for the juvenile arrest data, juvenile arrest in Chicago 2013 and 14, published November 8, 2015. It's kind of interesting the way that they break this down. This is from Chicago Youth Justice Data Project. Now, this gives a review of black and brown youth arrests and black and brown in prison. In 2013, black and brown arrests were 79.12%. The black and brown in institutions, 18.47%. Says the total number of juvenile arrests in 2014, 17 and under, 17,783. The number of juvenile arrests did decrease from 2013 to 2014. And since 2009 in Chicago, its juvenile arrests have actually decreased 43%. The blacks represent 39% of the 0 to 17 youth population. However, they accounted for 79% of juvenile arrests in Chicago. The Latins represent 40% of the youth population, and they accounted for over 18% of juvenile arrests in 2013 and 2014. Males accounted for 83% in 2014. 15 to 17 year olds accounted for over 80% of juvenile arrests. They represent 16.6% of Chicago's youth population, and 80% of them were arrested. Most juvenile arrests were for misdemeanor offenses. The top three in 2014 were miscellaneous non-index offenses, drug abuse violations, and simple battery. Based on the data of the juvenile arrests, when referred to court, detention, 19.1% resulted in detention, and 25.4% resulted in informal station adjustments, and 3.85% informal station adjustments. The they separate the populations into white, black, and all other minorities. To me, that I know that race has a huge factor on the number of arrests, but at the same time, that also goes into play with the type of communities. Now, you know, say for instance, whenever they are doing the racial profiling, and they are arresting people on the corners in the projects, or they arrest someone, they pull somebody over, you know, they notice a certain kind of a person driving around in a certain neighborhood, and they know that they're out of place, so they're going to go ahead and pull them over. Then they find drugs or they find weapons and they arrest them. Okay, were they wrong to do that? They were wrong to profile them, but at the same time, they got the drugs and the gun off the streets. Okay, now, do that in reverse. Okay, we see, I'm assuming that everybody's watched HBO's The Wire. If you didn't, it's a great series. The Wire is actually a phenomenal program, and it shows a really good glimpse into the project side of the drug and the money and the gangs, which is what a lot of communities are dealing with in the lower income areas within the cities, even within the rural neighborhoods. You know, no, it's not just the low income kids that are out there causing vandalism and driving drunk or drinking underage or whatever. Not at all. Clinton County is actually where I live at, is actually in the Guinness Book of World Record for the most alcohol consumption per capita. That's a great thing, right? To be in the Guinness Book of World Records for that. Most alcohol consumed per capita. Yeehaw. Anyway, what about if we take it in reverse? You know, how many times in the projects do these nice Lincoln Continentals or these nice Mustangs and Camaros and Chargers drive by with college kids and high school kids of the white race driving through, grabbing a bag of dope from a little 10 or 12 year old that's out on the corner because, you know, maybe his parents need the money, maybe his family needs the money, whatever. He's doing what's available to him, what he's been introduced to do, and he's out on the street corner. What if the police started watching for the white people in these projects? We know that they don't belong there. They're clean-cut kids. So bust them. Stop them from coming in and getting the drugs. If you do it in reverse, you're going to delinquish the amount of money and the amount of product that they are able to sell. Because if you're busting all of their customers, regardless of race, regardless of who or what, pick a corner, pick any corner in any project, stake it out. Anybody that pulls away from there, get them. Pull them over, check them out. no matter what race they are, no matter who they are, put them through the criminal justice system and let it be figured out in due process, the same as it is for those who are distributing the drugs. Because if we want to reduce what's happening in the projects and what's happening in the hood, or however, whatever word you want to use for it, I think we have to stop the people from coming in there to actually purchase these drugs. Stake out these corners and talk to these kids and work with these kids. Give them something else to do that is going to help them make their family money. Give them something else to do after school besides going and standing on a street corner. Get them involved. And, you know, we used to have free sports whenever I was a kid in school. If you wanted to go out for the basketball team, you went out for the basketball team. If you wanted to go out for, you know, cheerleading, you went out, you know, yeah, you know, there was rental for the uniform or purchase for the uniform, but you could go out and you could get involved. And kids nowadays, they are taking away all of these after-school programs. Schools don't get involved with this stuff anymore. They definitely want to avoid any after-school liability that they might have for these kids. So therefore, you find more and more people, more and more kids getting in trouble, all of them picking up a weapon or distributing drugs. And when I say all of them, I don't mean every kid in the project or every kid in the hood. I don't know what's going on with the car across the street. I apologize if you can hear that. But it is most definitely a problem that continues, and it is a problem that we see. You know, although the crime rate is decreasing, we are finding, you know, that these kids are still getting into so much trouble. They are, you know, like I said, on a national basis, you know, you've got 3,300 rape offenders under the age of 18. You have another 9,400 charged with sex offenses other than forcible rape. You have 700 being charged with prostitution, which again, they changed that law. I don't know why they are showing it here, but they are. They should not be charged with those offenses. That law has changed on a federal level, not a state level. It is illegal to charge someone under the age of 18 for prostitution because they are under the age of consent. Under the age of consent means that someone is making them, someone's pulling the strings for them to be out there doing this, doing these sex crimes and these sex offenses. So it is not prostitution for anyone under the age of 17. Or under the age of 18, rather. But you've got, you know, drug abuse violations accounted for 112,000 youth that are going through the system. Now, these are kids that are going through the system. They have to go to court. They have to be determined how serious the offense, how does their individual state prosecute them for that offense? And are they taking the bite for somebody else? If they are working, if they are one of the ones who are the 112,000 for drug abuse violations, all right, are they the ones getting caught with the drugs because the gang leaders are putting the juveniles out there on the corners and telling them to take the rap for it because they know they'll get an easier sentence? Happens all the time, right? Or they have to justify themselves and be initiated into a gang. So they commit murder, manslaughter, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, burglary, larceny, arson, forgery, embezzlement. How does a teenager commit embezzlement? Fraud. Gambling. Offenses against the family and children. You know, 3,400 teens went off the deep end and actually attacked their families. It just boggles my mind that we have this many kids on the streets who in our communities. You know, I know last week, November in St. Louis, there was a 16-year-old girl who got shot by a stray bullet. There was a 6-year-old girl shot in the head just a couple weeks ago. In Chicago, there was an 11-year-old girl killed. These are coming out across the country. Juvenile deaths are by guns is climbing. It is getting to the point that it's almost like the Wild Wild West. And Missouri, I think I talked about this a couple weeks back, Missouri passed the open gun laws. It's an open carry state. It's a stand your ground state. That means, like the situation with Trayvon Martin, and the guy felt threatened, and, you know, even though he wasn't in immediate danger, he pulled the gun and he killed him. Nobody witnessed it. He was able to claim stand your ground law. Well, to me, stand your ground law is a lot like the Wild Wild West. Everybody's got a weapon. You don't at all ages. I mean, 12-year-olds are walking around with weapons. And you feel that for some reason, you've got your weapon and you're carrying your weapon. You can then pull that gun out and shoot somebody at any time. It's a sad, sad thing when we start looking at those kinds of gun laws. I'm all for gun ownership. I don't have a problem with anybody owning guns. Assault rifles are fun to go out and blast away at nature with, or blast away at targets. But they're not they're not something you want to take out on the streets and start shooting people up with. You have to have responsible gun ownership. There has to be a way to control this so that criminals, how is it that they keep getting all these guns? Where are these guns coming from? Is anyone investigating that link as to where these guns are coming from? Because they're being trafficked from somewhere. We use the word trafficked whenever anybody's shipping or using a distribution process, selling something for something, selling illegal something for a certain amount of money or some type of profit. that is a trafficking situation, no matter if it's a person or if it's a weapon or if it's a drug. You are selling something that is illegal to sell and making some type of profit off that. So where do these guns come from? Who is it that's sending these guns? Where are these kids? How is it that all these kids are getting these guns? You know, these 15, 16, 17-year-old kids with these guns, and they're going around shooting up each other, and their bullets are hitting houses. And, you know, as I said, these are children watching television or playing on their porch, and all of a sudden they see someone that they know get gunned down right in front of them because somebody's driving by in a car and just shoots them down. They will never, ever catch these people. The gangs will never admit to it because they are going to go out and retaliate for the person that they killed. Then that gives them reason to fight back. If one crosses over into another one's turf, you know, God forbid they're by themselves because they're going to get the crap beat out of them, you know, or they are going to get killed, or they are just going to, you know, more than likely they're not going to be able to walk through the neighborhood safely. Hardly anyone will be. So if we want to reduce the crime in these neighborhoods and we want to reduce the ability for these young offenders to get into trouble, is it about raising community efforts to put after-school activities together? Is it about engaging during school to talk about the gang violence and ways to avoid the violence? Is it about, you know, picking out a few of the really bad eggs in the classroom or in the school system that you believe are, you know, involved with gangs and put them in a classroom all on their own that they go to every single day and work with those kids that are deep into the system and kind of like Freedom Riders? If anyone ever watched the movie Freedom Riders, phenomenal movie. We do have the, I have a chat board up in the Facebook group if anyone's interested. I know people are disappointed, no video today. As I said, I've got a guest coming on Thursday, and with the subject matter that we are talking about, I wanted to be sure, you know, and tie that in with her appearance next week. I think it's important that we, as adults, you know, even if we're 50 years old and we don't have any kids, some part of us needs to be concerned about, okay, what are those kids? Because they're not having the same kind of childhood as what my kids had. Not the same kind of childhood that I had. They are living in a day-to-day war zone, and they've got to grow up like that. You know, we worry about these countries overseas where these battles are being fought. And, yeah, you know, these big bombs are going off and ISIS is going in and killing people. I get it. It's a severe and it's an extreme situation. However, try walking through one of the communities in Chicago on the west side or on the south side. Try walking through the Horseshoe neighborhood of St. Louis. Try walking through the gang territories of Los Angeles. Try making it through the gang and the project areas of New York City, of Washington, D.C., Baltimore. The cities are climbing with these inner eruptions. And these are kids that are exploding, and they, you know, these little, it's nothing to them. They see neighbors and friends and family who go to jail or go to prison forever, all the time. You know, go to an inner city school and ask the kids, how many of you have parents who have been in jail, are in jail now? Are they in jail for drugs? Are they in jail for murder? Are they in jail for gun violations? Guns are causing, I'm not saying that guns are causing these problems, because that's twisted. You know, it takes a person. It's just like a computer. A computer is absolutely harmless until you, a person, an individual, a human being, starts typing something in there. Then it becomes, can be used as an offensive weapon. Causes a lot of kids to commit suicide, bullying threats, online threats, right? Stalking, those kinds of offenses. Then that gun laying there on that counter or in that drawer, in that nightstand, locked away in that safe, is not a problem. It is the person who is responsible for that weapon. Have they put it away safely? Is there any possibility that a kid can get to it? Is there, you don't put a gun under a mattress, and you don't put a gun under your bed. You don't put a gun in, and, not unless it's locked, not unless you have a trigger lock on it, so that that way that trigger cannot be pulled. And, it protects, it helps save lives. But when you've got these random shootings going on in your neighborhood, and it's nothing for you to be watching TV, hear the gunshots go off, and take cover. When that is your life every day, not only do you have to deal with going to school and the bullying and the violence and the threats, and you go online and there's bullying and threats and violence, and you watch the news and it's threats and it's violence and it's war, and it's, President Trump and its egos and it's this and it's that. And then in your home, you've got arguing and fighting and, the kids are being hurt. Mom and dad are going at it and all they know. And then they want to try and figure out why we have mental health care problems. Why do we have so many people caught up in the mental health care system? Why can they not get help? Why are so many people being diagnosed with bipolar and disobedient behavior defiant disorder or whatever it is? They put a tag and a label on everything, and without even looking at the inner workings of their environment, without even talking to them about what's going on, it's, here's your diagnosis and here's some medication and here's some therapy suggestions, because I don't talk to you more than 10 or 15 minutes. I charge you $100 and some an hour. I'll give you this prescription. And then you need to come back in here once a week or once every other week or, maybe once a month, talk to this therapist. And you need to talk to her about what's going on at home, or talk to them, could be a man, about what's going on in your neighborhood and what's causing you to behave this way. But I want you to start taking this medication right away. So before they've even figured out what it is, they're going to numb these kids out. They're going to shut them down. They are going to tell them, we don't want you to feel anything. We don't want you to be aggressive. We don't want you to misbehave. We don't want you to open your mouth and object. We don't want you to be a troublemaker, so we are going to put you on medications. I have a huge problem with that. If, in fact, they want to help these kids, work with the community services that are in the neighborhood, that know these kids. A lot of times there are former gang members who come out and they want to try to turn things around. There is a man online who does videos, Mark Clements. I'm going to try to set up an interview with him so we can talk to him about what he's seen inside the prisons. He was wrongfully convicted. He talks on behalf of those ignored through the justice system and sitting in cells for a lifetime, waiting some 30 years for it to be proven that they are not guilty of the crime that they are charged with. They deny the crime. They offer them a lesser sentence and they deny the crime. They say, no, I didn't do this. I won't take the rap for this. And they can't pay their bail, so they're filling up our prison systems and our county jail systems because, you know, if you can't afford bail, you got to sit in county jail until you get your court hearing. And once you get your court hearing, you know, everything starts rolling. But it could take years of sitting in county jail. And some of those county jails are pretty rough. In the information that I was looking at earlier for the juveniles that are sitting in prison, you know, it's really sad. I wanted to bring up how many the juveniles in corrections. You know, they send them to residential facilities, but they are still considered a juvenile justice system. I had the number here. You know, in St. Louis, the Missouri Bar has brought forth a lawsuit. CBS Local News reported this. Missouri Bar is bringing forth a lawsuit saying that the juvenile justice system in the state of Missouri is not giving special considerations to young offenders at parole hearings. The under 18 in adult jail on a national basis is approximately 4,200. It's 4,200 kids sitting in adult prisons. You know, adults can't even handle prisons. So I'm not real sure how well I know that they put them in segregation, and I know that they've got to get them acquainted slowly, you know, but you can't send some 14-year-old in there to do time with a bunch of adults and tell him, you know, he's got to eat lunch with all these men and he's got to sleep in the same bunk as one of, you know, same cell as one of these men. No, they do have to be separated, but they're being sent away. You know, Netflix has some fabulous documentaries. I'm a huge fan of Netflix documentaries. They do a great prospect. There was one that I had watched that reviewed cases of those juvenile offenders sentenced to life in prison for murder. They went in at 14 and, you know, or like the young girl who went in at 12 years old and, you know, because they wanted to see what it was like to kill somebody or because it was a gang initiation or because they got angry and, you know, they were beat on all the time at home. And violence is what they knew. It's how they knew how to handle their world. Those of us who live in rural communities, we don't have a clue with these our kids who go to our small little public schools where, you know, yeah, they have metal detectors and, yeah, they have a security guard, but, you know, they have a zero tolerance policy. And because they are a small school and they do have a rural community who goes there, they don't have to worry about gangs and drugs and violence or sex crimes in the actual school itself. We don't have to worry about, I can go to sleep with my door unlocked. That's the town that I live in. That's the world I live in. It's peaceful. It's quiet. The place that I've always picked to live in as I was raising my kids. So my kids knew that they could go to sleep in a safe home, in a safe neighborhood. Now, kids have so much to worry about. And in these communities, in these projects, in these inner city areas, where the drugs are the key factor that are sending these kids to the street corners, start arresting the people pulling away from the street corners. Don't arrest the kids. Arrest the people buying from the kids. Put them out of business. Make that corner so dangerous for people that they know they're going to get busted. And when that corner runs dry, you go over to the next corner. And then the next corner. Because when the well starts running dry, they will start stirring up the pot, fighting for more territory. But then you get the gang leaders because the kids are doing, one, their parents know that they are out there on the corner. Otherwise, they keep their kids inside or they keep them with them at all times. Majority of these parents know that their kids are on the corner, making extra money because they live on welfare. Rather than, you know, those that have jobs, you know, granted, maybe they don't know. But my guess is that they probably do. That's about all I have on this topic right now. But again, Stephanie Mann, crime prevention specialist since 1978, is going to be here with me Thursday. And she and I are going to discuss this in further detail. Then I'm going to get Mark Clements on for an interview with him to discuss what he has witnessed in our prison system. I think that it is very much a shame that our kids are having to live life like this, that this is their world and this is all they know. I'm going to, you may remember that we had Harmony in with us, you know, and he donated a song for us. As we close out today, I'm going to say goodbye, God bless, and I'm going to play you If I Go Away. And If I Go Away is based on gang violence and the gang attitude and the retribution and, you know, making that choice to pick up that gun and shoot somebody. So, as I say goodbye to you and good day, good evening, peace out from me. This is Topics with Trish on Your Voice Radio Network, Tuesday, February 21st. And we are going to play our way out of this segment with Harmony's If I Go Away. Thank you. Have a great evening, everybody. See you on Thursday live with Stephanie Mann. Thank you. Listen in.
Look what you've done.
So why did you do it?
You've torn this family apart!
I know, Dad. I know.
I already know. Stop telling me!
Baby, I'm gonna wait for you.
I love him because he's my grandson.
There's nothing else we can do.
Ma'am, what's done is done. And I cannot
be here anymore. I don't wanna go, I don't wanna be here. I just wanna leave, mama wanna come back home. And I promise I won't do anything, just cause I hate it here and I don't wanna be here anymore.
Anymore.